welcome once again to The Blueprint. It's Canada's conservative podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmale, Member of Parliament for Halliburton, Kawartha Lakesbrook. Thank you very much once again for joining us. Before we get into a very important topic, we're going to talk about the public inquiry into Canada's worst mass shooting in its history with our critic, Shannon Stubbs, a Member of Parliament for Lakeland. She's also the public safety critic, as I mentioned. We need you to help us push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. So what that means is, if you can't watch the whole episode today on a platform like Facebook, you can download it, listen to it later, tell your friends about it. It's available on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it, it's out there. So we appreciate that. And this way, we can all start to move into areas and maybe access voters that might be open to the conservative message, but might not be getting that because the mainstream media is focusing on one side and one side only. So we need your help for that. So because of that, because of the important topics we cover here in Parliament, we're going to bring in Shannon Stubbs here. Shannon, come on in.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me. I'm here in my kitchen near Two Hills, Alberta on the farm. And actually, beautiful weather for November. Crazy.
Well, it is snowing in Ottawa today, so it's a bit of a change in pace. Usually it's
made my day even better.
Well, yes, I know. Yeah, the suffering of those in Ottawa. So onto a more serious topic, because you are the public safety critic, and I do appreciate your time here. So about 6 months ago, Canada experienced one of, the worst mass shooting in its history in the beautiful province of Nova Scotia. And I think it was clear after it happened and kind of the stories in the media that started to come out afterwards that we needed a bigger, Canadians, Nova Scotians needed a bigger view into what had actually transpired through the whole process and where things could move forward. And this seemed to point in all directions to a public inquiry, but that's not what the Trudeau Liberals originally said they would go forward with in this circumstance.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jamie. I think it's important to recall that the calls for a public inquiry, particularly from the family members of victims and from the communities who were most directly impacted, were immediate. And it makes sense on the face of it. Obviously, the worst mass murder in Canadian history would merit, I would think, a public inquiry, just being as it is. But of course, then the other information that was coming out with regards to the firearms that the murderer used and other aspects, it became clear that there are real answers that all Canadians need to hear and get at about how this tragedy transpired. And however, the minister, Bill Blair, the Minister of Public Safety, he originally said that there should only be an internal review. And families and communities there immediately responded and said, no, you know, we need to have a full airing of all of the information so that we can get real answers that everybody deserves. But he made them protest and plead and beg for months, Jamie. So imagine going through an unimaginable loss, anguish and pain and grief and confusion, like most people can never really imagine, never really conceive of. And that minister forced these families and those community members to protest, to have to take to the streets, to also get politically involved to try to get the minister to do the right thing. And I just think, frankly, that that's unconscionable. And but they did it. And to their credit, finally, just, I don't know, a week ago or two weeks ago, finally, the minister announced that the public inquiry will be launched with the appointment of a last commissioner. But overall, it's been almost 7 months. And, you know, it was 3 months when they said they were going to do this. It was 3 months after the shooting, and then they said they were going to do an inquiry, but then one of the former commissioners said, well, she didn't have the time to actually do that. And so there's just been delay after delay, and the minister dragging and dithering on actually doing what the families and the communities are calling for.
Well, if my memory is correct, I believe the minister at the time of making the announcement of the public review, not the inquiry, the original review, which sent shockwaves throughout the province of Nova Scotia, it turned out later that if again, my memory is correct, the minister hadn't actually spoken to a member of his Atlantic caucus on the best path forward in this situation.
Yes, I heard the same thing. I don't know for sure, but it became very clear that if he was actually listening to anybody in Nova Scotia, including members of his own team, he wouldn't have made that decision for the review in the first place. But really, I think the credit belongs to the families and the relatives of the victims and their community members who rallied around them together to ask for this public inquiry that is needed so direly. Here's what I'm worried about. You know, now the minister sort of wants to parade and peacock about the fact that he has called this public inquiry, but of course it's still in very early stages. It will be, you know, probably weeks, maybe even months before testimony actually is heard. I believe they're aiming for a report in 2022. And so, Jamie, there's another aspect of this which we have been pushing the minister on. Families now want to know exactly why the decision was made in the first place to only do a review. And they want included in the terms of reference for the public inquiry all of the decision making, all of the processes, and all of the factors that that happened between the wrong decision to only have a review and also to finally get to calling a public inquiry. The families have together said all of these delays further victimized them. And they feel like both governments acted with secrecy and not in the best interest of the families. Those are their words. And they say that in order to ensure a meaningful inquiry and to ensure that future processes like this are actually transparent and meaningful and accountable, that the terms of reference of this inquiry must include all of those decision-making, all those factors and all of that evidence related to the initial decision just to have a review and then to move to the public inquiry. So most recently, we've been pushing the minister on exactly that, on getting him to honor the most recent request of the families to include all of that in the public inquiry. Now, Jamie, it won't surprise you. He hit back and said he alleged that this was just questions we were asking for political advantage. But I can tell you, and I can tell you this firsthand because I have, if he had spoken to any relative or family member of those victims, he would know that we as conservatives and I, not asking questions for our party, not asking questions for us individually, we are directly being the voice of family members who he's ignoring, and that they themselves have asked for all of this information so that they can get answers that they deserve.
Now, of course, and no doubt in anyone's mind, this was an extremely tragic and horrific event and needs to be dealt with. That's why we're asking for these answers. But shortly after this shooting, that's when the Prime Minister and Minister Blair came out with the decision to ban a whole whack of firearms that were used in a lot of cases, and actually all of the cases within the sports shooting and hunting community. However, what we as an opposition have been calling for years now is the fact that the shooter obtained those firearms that were used in this tragedy illegally, many of which were smuggled across the United States-Canada border. And that's something we've been calling for years, to tighten up that border so that these illegal firearms or illegal drugs or anything else that should not be entering our country stops. And this is something the Liberals failed to do. So they came up with this next program, which will actually do nothing to stop the disgusting shootings that are happening.
That's exactly right. At least ever since you and I have both been elected in 2015, our colleagues and our party have been consistently calling for the government to focus on where the problem is, which is actually illegal importations and through the border and illegal smuggling and gun trading, often precipitated by organized crime. And I would suggest that not only has our party been calling for that for the past 5 years, but I think we have always been calling for that in every election and every debate over this issue, every time it comes up, because the priority has to be cracking down on criminals while protecting and balancing the rights and freedoms of law-abiding, innocent Canadians and honoring victims of crime. And I know you probably could speak to this more personally, but I know that since 2015, shootings have increased in Toronto exponentially. And the police chief there says the vast majority of them are related to illegal firearms trading and gang activity. So what is mind-boggling is that now you see the public safety minister, he's starting to talk about that. Like, he's saying those words, but I don't know about you and all your viewers, Jamie, what boggles my mind is the part where they've been in power for half a decade. And so I sort of feel like, yeah, thanks for, you know, thanks for saying the right things at the 11th hour, but where is the real action that they should have taken, actions that we proposed, right? For dedicated CBSA plus other law enforcement concerted efforts to crack down on border smuggling of illegal firearms, to really crack down on organized crime and on gang activity. And said they're not doing that, they're doing what liberals always do, which is, you know, creating a bureaucracy which will go after highly vetted, law-abiding, responsible, innocent Canadians instead of where the attention and the resources need to be to actually have hope of preventing these kinds of tragedies in the future.
As I've said many times on this program, and we've had Glenn Motz and others here to talk about it, is what the Liberals are doing is basically providing a false sense of security for Canadians. You're not actually stopping the shootings that, as you mentioned, are largely happening within the gang community. That needs to stop. But the problem is they're still getting their firearms illegally. Meanwhile, the innocent firearms owners, the law-abiding firearms owners that might use their firearms to go hunt or to sport shoot, they're the ones that are going to be punished because they follow the law. And they will do what the government tells them to do because they are law-abiding, but actually not stopping
the problem. They already followed the rules.
Right.
Yes.
And you're not actually solving anything. They call themselves
down the people who don't give a rip about the laws and the rules in the first place, right?
And they call themselves progressive, but they're not actually progressing towards anything. It's just a whole bunch of new government employees, and still the problems will continue because they're going after the wrong people.
Yeah, and you know, Jamie, there are some family members of the victims of the Nova Scotia shooting who have spoken out about that, who said that they were shocked at what they perceived to be the Prime Minister and the Minister using that tragedy and that devastation to their lives and the murder of their loved ones to bring in that OIC. Which you'll remember, and we should probably remind all your folks here that they did outside of Parliament being able to operate in its full scope. Remember, we were basically in the glorified COVID committee, which the Prime Minister pretended was actually Parliament, but wasn't, where opposition members were stripped of their powers, where we didn't have the same ability for debates. They didn't even bring in, they haven't even had a debate in Parliament about this issue. And it's heartbreaking to hear family members of those victims say, hold on a second, you have used this tragedy to bring in this draconian measure, which won't target even the things we already know about the problems and about what led to this mass murder. Yet on the other hand, have dragged your heels for months and months and months on doing what was blindingly obvious and the just thing to do in the first place, which was to have a full public inquiry.
Since we are talking about the border, and I love your passion on this topic, let's talk about the number of, fairly wealthy people who are able to cross the border without quarantining for that 14 days. Meanwhile, we are seeing other restrictions on people who are trying to get their family members across the border, who are trying to deal with this situation. But yet, apparently, if you are well connected, you're able to bounce back and forth, no problems.
Yeah. This has been crazy. And you know what? I guess like as conservatives, we might not say the words I'm about to say very often, but thank goodness for the media. And actually, it's a CBC investigative reporter who actually allowed Canadians to know for the first time that this kind of thing is happening, which I think has been shocking. So you and all the folks joining in with us have probably seen there's been information coming out that between August and October, there are instances of different American, literally billionaire, business executives who have managed to get these exemptions from quarantining. And in some cases, not only did they just go to, you know, a certain designated work site for a photo op, for example, but in other cases actually where they traveled from province to province, three different provinces, went around the country. Most recently, an example where they came in to force their workers to adopt a contract, to put the pressure on them to adopt a new contract. And meanwhile, you know, I'm sure in your office, like in mine and all of our colleagues, you know, we get concerns and worry one after another of everyday working Canadians, either about their relatives or their small businesses or whatever travel they might be doing, where they face these restrictions. And some crazy things we've heard recently, Jamie, like people who they accidentally take a wrong turn and they end up just on the border. They get told by the US officials, no problem, turn around, go home. They don't even get out of the car. They come back and get told by CBSA, they need to go home and quarantine for 14 days. Like, that's bananas, you know? Or I know of examples where two pilots, they were at a conference, they came back here, and the individual decision at the border was one was declared essential, one was not. So one came back cool beans, the other one had to quarantine for 14 days. There's example after example after example like this. And what's confusing and bizarre is all the different answers, right? So originally on that original story, that first one that broke about this American billionaire executive who came in and got the free pass, that the Minister of Public Safety blamed CBSA officials. He said, you know, his words were that was a mistake and those people should not have been permitted entry. So of course, naturally, we as conservatives answered, well, what exact directives or guidelines did you subsequently give then to clarify? If you say that this is a mistake, he of course wouldn't answer that question. Yet, I followed up on a couple of these other instances more recently, and Minister Champagne, the Foreign Affairs Minister, answered the questions. Well, his answer was that this isn't an individual case-by-case thing, that these exemptions are granted with consultation between, you know, three different organizations, provinces and territories, the department. So what is it? You know, is it a case-by-case individual basis happening at the border? Is it this much more comprehensive process that the other minister has outlined? No wonder Canadians just have no idea what to expect when they go to the border. And I guess we should also remember in the very beginning of all of this, you'll recall, Jamie, like our party asked the Liberals to take action on the border in response to COVID in January. And they dithered and delayed and did nothing until about March. Well, now Canadians are just quite clearly asking for some certainty and some clarity. And it makes no sense whatsoever, all of this evidence coming out that, you know, Canadians in their own daily lives or with their families or with their small businesses, they face all these restrictions, they face all this uncertainty. Yet it seems like if you're a US billionaire, you know, the rules don't apply to you.
Well, Shannon, we only have a few minutes left, and traditionally when you have been on this program in your role, your previous role as natural resources critic, we always talk about pipelines and how your province of Alberta, the beautiful province of Alberta, is doing. Maybe just give us a quick snapshot. I know you could go on for hours about this topic, but just a quick update would be fantastic.
Well, I think that Albertans know that the Liberals are continuing to go down their anti-Alberta, anti-energy, anti-private sector path. I think that it is even more concerning, of course, because they have their allies in the NDP and the Greens and the Bloc supporting them on their anti-energy legislation and policies. You've probably seen there recently was a big purchase, a sort of a conglomeration between Cenovus and Husky that is going to lead, it looks so far, like more job losses in my area and in Rosemary Falk's area. And I think the Liberals might try to make that seem like it shows health in the industry, but what it actually shows, in my view, is part of the damage of the policies and the bad policies, the anti-energy legislation that's been brought forward, exacerbating and aggravating global factors. And what's actually starting to happen is the thing that you and I talked about a lot when we worked together on the Natural Resources Committee, and which we're concerned about, which is an increasing consolidation, conglomeration in the industry, and an increasing oligopoly of just only the very biggest companies that can manage to survive. And so as always, and like you and I used to fight together on that committee and talk about, you know, I am very concerned and will keep fighting for small and medium-sized contractors, for individual workers, for especially the companies in the service supply contracting industry, which is the lifeblood of the Canadian oil and gas sector. And so, yeah, I know that even though I'm no longer in that spot, we Conservatives are still going to be fighting for oil and gas workers in Alberta, right across the country. I think there's probably even more anti-energy / fantasy land policy coming down the pipe, so to speak, that we're going to have to fight and to stand up against. And I know that we will.
I know we only have a short minute. I do need to build on what you said, and I know I'm being told that time is pretty much out, but that's what big government likes, right? They like only a few handful of big organizations. It's easy for them, and in return, they bring in barriers to competition for the smaller and medium-sized companies, so they can't get a foothold in the marketplace, and all is good in government land. Meanwhile, there's no competition in the industry. The cost for the service or the product goes up, the quality goes down, and everyday people suffer as a result. And it will happen in the oil and gas industry if the Trudeau Liberals continue to run Ottawa.
Yeah, exactly right. And Jamie, yeah, we don't have time to get into this, but the massive amounts of deficit that they're racking up, the spending. I mean, I don't know who they expect to pay the bills when this all comes crashing down. And frankly, in the economy, it was the oil and gas sector. So they better figure out something in a hurry, because the damage that they're doing I think it's going to be destructive to the country, to future generations. And I know you and I used to talk about this a lot, like, where the heck do they think the jobs and then all the tax dollars that provide the programs and services people value come from?
Well, that's the fear. They want to ensure that there are the jobs the left approves of, right? These green jobs that are heavily subsidized and only are a result of the massive amount of money that is shoveled into them. Look at the green energy policy here in Ontario that the Ontario Liberals brought in and made Ontario absolutely uncompetitive in the global marketplace when you're talking about the price of electricity. So thank you, Shannon.
And all those people in those, you would always tell me about all those, especially rural Ontarians who have to choose between heating and eating. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, to cause that kind of energy poverty for people who are vulnerable, low income, but seniors and fixed incomes and rural people. And it's a scary thing to think that they might try to do that to the whole country.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many food banks opened up or saw a massive increase in people walking through, because people, you're right, were choosing between eating or heating or their medicine or their electricity. It was a total horrible program. And the Trudeau Liberals do need to be stopped. But I do need to let you go because question period is coming up. If you're able to stick around, check out our leaders page, Aaron O'Toole. He will have question period on that platform, Facebook, probably the most common. Be sure to listen in. We're going to be really pressing the Liberals. Once again, Shannon Stubbs, Member of Parliament for Lakeland in the beautiful province of Alberta, public safety critic. Thank you so much once again. I could talk to you for hours, and I do appreciate your passion on this.
Hey, thanks, Jamie. Likewise.
And remember, we will be back with new content next Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, if you can't watch us here today, please download us, CastBox, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, you name it, it's out there. And also, like, comment, subscribe, share this program, help us push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, low taxes, less governments, more freedom. That's the blueprint.
That is the blueprint.